Committee on Metropolitan Council Accountability and Transparency to order. And welcome. We do have some minutes from the meeting of last week. And Representative Lane, I wondered if you would be willing to make a motion to approve. Thank you. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Approved. All right. We have a bill up that we're going to hear for informational purposes today, and it deals with Met Council guidelines and talks about making them advisory in nature. And I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Albright to conduct the meeting. We do have several elected officials that are going to be testifying, and you can add to that list if you would, Mayor Mary Giuliani Stevens from Woodbury. So she is here and she will testify also.
Representative Runbeck, welcome to the committee. And you are presenting House File 75, so why don't you go ahead with your introduction and presentation of that bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 75, I think it was even introduced in the last session, and it's in response to sort of a growing chorus of concern about the prescriptive nature and of the growing sort of expansion of authority that the Met Council has over our cities and counties in the metro area. And we know that, you know, the council has been in alive for, 35, 40 years, and they've been given authority in statutes over land use planning. We know that they have authority over the environmental services, and with that authority, they put together the comprehensive policy statements, and those come out every 10 years. And we are now in a period where a brand new policy statement called Thrive 2040 has been produced, and it has been voted on by the Met Council, the concept of it. And now then, the specific policy plans pertaining to transportation and housing and some of the other aspects are being generated and will be voted on. I guess transportation policy has been voted on and approved by the Met Council. The housing plan, and maybe we'll get an idea of when that will be voted on by the Met Council, but that is imminent in terms of being ready to be implemented. And so there's quite a depth of comments that have been received by the Met Council regarding Thrive 2040 in general. And cities and counties of all sizes have provided their comments. And I think that does help us get an idea of where this plan is taking the metropolitan area. And so I've asked a number of these folks if they wouldn't share their comments with us. I believe that what my bill really does is talk in general about guidelines, but, you know, the most current set of guidelines, of course, is Thrive 2040. And I mean, really looking for input. There's certainly areas where we know that Met Council must act and must, you know, with their authority, bring regions together for the sake of wastewater services and treatment and so on. I mean, that all seems to make a great deal of sense. When Thrive 2040 embarks into areas of defining the amount of low-income housing in areas, prescriptively stating how many jobs each city is to create, and what racial content each city is going to have, and what the economic development picture is going to look like, it begins to look like there's a lot of mission creep underway. And certainly the reaction of many of the cities, as we read them, suggests there's a great deal of concern. So I think that this is a great opportunity, you know, for us as a committee to begin, a subcommittee, to begin to look at the layers and get a better understanding, and certainly to understand from the local elected officials' perspective what this means for their, you know, next 10, 20, 25 years. So with that, I don't know if anyone has any comments to that, but I do have Rhonda Sivaraja, chair of the Anoka County Board of Commissioners, and she's going to come first. If she would, please.
Welcome, Commissioner, to the committee. And just for the record, if you could state your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Rhonda Sivaraja, and I'm chair of the Anoka County Board of Commissioners. I applaud Representative Runbeck's efforts, as the premise of this bill is to solve a problem that exists with the current Metropolitan Council, its authority, its scope, and an increasing mission creep. Their scope continues to grow and grow, and now we also see them venturing into the area of economic development, indicating to counties that this is voluntary, but we know anything that starts out voluntary quickly becomes a mandate down the road. The council is responsible for preparing a comprehensive development guide for the seven county metropolitan area, and that is exactly what it should be, a guide rather than a prescriptive rule which communities are told that they must follow. Thrive 2040 is supposed to provide a framework for a shared vision for the future of our region over the next 30 years. The problem is that Thrive 2040 plan is supposed to be, again, a shared vision, a regional plan with local input. Local input to this plan was virtually ignored. This certainly does not demonstrate planning, coordination, and collaboration. Thrive 2040 states broad general goals and principles that at a high level could be supported by many. The devil really is in the details as to how it gets implemented into policy within the individual plans. For example, the document may claim regional equity as a goal for the region. This is what Thrive 2040 says. Equity connects all residents to opportunity and creates viable housing, transportation, and recreation opportunities for people of all races, ethnicities, incomes, and abilities so that all communities share the opportunity and challenges of growth and change. So I don't think that there's anybody that could say, boy, that's a really bad idea. I think on the surface, it sounds like, you know, that's a very positive statement. It's hard to argue with that. Anoka County saw this and thought, you know, our area really should benefit from this goal, as we have a cross-section of people from a variety of races, ethnicities, incomes, and abilities. In fact, the Anoka-Hennepin School District, the largest school district in the state of Minnesota, has children speaking nearly 100 languages within its school district. The real problem occurs is that when they adopt these broad visions into practice and in the specific policy plans, our poverty and ethnic diversity in Anoka County isn't necessarily concentrated. We have followed best practices in the area of housing, focusing on scattered site housing that's affordable in order to really help lift people up within their communities. As immigrants have gained employment and realized the American dream, they've chosen to move into different neighborhoods, not necessarily staying only with those from their own culture. And I think that that's something that we should celebrate. But as a result, we're actually penalized because of it. I know that Representative Lane, and I'm sure that others here may have heard of the community of Hilltop. It's located in Anoka County next to Columbia Heights. Hilltop consists of mainly a manufactured home community. According to the Met Council, Hilltop needs to add more affordable housing. The only way for them to add affordable housing is to take the homes of the people who are living there and build apartment buildings for people who are of low income. They provide a great deal of low-income housing within that community. So again, the devil's in the details as to how things are actually implemented. The process was really flawed and predetermined from the outset. We saw them at council in the adoption of Thrive 2040, the transportation policy plan, and the funding solicitation process all being conducted at the exact same time. How inclusive and collaborative were they when they were implementing elements of Thrive into the solicitation criteria before the Thrive and the transportation policy plan were even concluded? Cramming something down everyone's throat doesn't build consensus, and diverting limited highway fund investments based on equity plans only further reduce our ability to meet the regional goals for transportation within the metropolitan area. The Met Council needs oversight revision. There are a variety of solutions to solve this problem, and I believe that in order to truly have a positive impact on the Met Council as a regional planning agency, two things need to be in place. There needs to be a governance change. I believe local elected officials need to serve as Met Council members as they understand the communities they represent, are actually elected, not appointed, and are already involved in these issues on a daily basis. And that provides some accountability. And a reformed Met Council, most importantly, needs to be independent of the governor. To me, it doesn't matter who the governor is. There were problems with the Met Council under the Pawlenty administration. There continues to be problems under the Dayton administration. This is a bipartisan problem that needs to be addressed with bold action. I think part of the problem is that the Met Council is a very staff-driven organization, with the Met Council members not necessarily having the background and expertise in order to recognize some of the limitations of the plans. As suburban counties, we look forward to working with you to tackle an issue that has festered for far too long. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick thing, just as your final statement there. I was wondering, we have said a lot that it's staff-driven and the knowledge isn't in the directors, but if you were on it, would you have the technical knowledge? I'm just wondering what, you know, I'm looking for answers, and if we put elected people on, would they know any more than the people that are sitting on it now?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lane, within the counties, we deal with transportation on a daily basis, those issues. We, within Anoka County, have actually set up a committee structure so that we have commissioners, very much like you do in the legislature, really specialize in given areas, whether it be housing, human services, economic development, as well as transportation. Many of the same areas that the Met Council is involved with on a daily basis.
Representative Lane.
So you have staff that assist you, as the Met Council people have staff that assist them, and you become more knowledgeable in a certain area, such as a person on the Met Council could become more knowledgeable in a certain area. Like I say, I'm looking for solutions, and I'm just challenging whether or not people that are elected would actually bring more knowledge to the Met Council than the system we have now or not. It's just a good question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lane, I believe that the current structure of having the Met Council representatives appointed by the governor, recognizing that it's basically for the term of that governor, and when a new governor comes in, all of that changes. I think that many times staff probably see the Met Council members as visitors who are passing through, and ultimately, because their term is short and it doesn't necessarily continue beyond that administration, really knowledge is power, and that's where that power base continues to grow.
Commissioner, I have a question for you, and it would pertain to the Thrive 2040 plan in terms of your own county's growth profile. In terms of the coordination, how would your growth profile differ if not unimpeded, but if it were of an advisory, more of an advisory, as you suggest, as opposed to more of a subservient nature to Thrive 2040? How would that differ in your planning for the next, say, 10 or 15 years?
Mr. Chairman, within Anoka County, we do not have planning and zoning authority. That is something that has been delegated to our cities. So that really would be determined based on those individual communities. We do have communities within Anoka County who very much want to remain more of a rural community with large lots. This plan doesn't necessarily encourage or accommodate that. In fact, there tends to be a lot of backlash towards those communities who are not necessarily excited to take affordable housing, or who are not necessarily excited to create these typical suburban neighborhoods.
Commissioner, then with regard to the coordination between the local municipalities and the county itself, can you describe what process that is a part of?
So, Mr. Chairman, within Anoka County, we work very closely with our 21 cities, and we have 20 cities and one township. We have quarterly meetings with them. We have our staff, as well as us, work very closely with elected officials to identify what are their priorities for the community and how can we work together to make sure that we're bringing those things forward, whether it be in the area of transportation or housing. We have a housing redevelopment authority. We work with them to see, you know, do you see a need for senior housing? Do you see a need for affordable housing? Those are all things that we partner with our local communities, but again, it's based on what they're asking from us and the assistance that they need from us, not us telling them what they need to have within their community.
Representative Fenton.
Well, I was going to ask about, as this process of putting together the Thrive 2040 and whatnot with Met Council, was there good communication and coalition building between the Met Council and the county and the city leaders?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fenton, typically what the Met Council does is they will have a public meeting where people give input. They have it on their website, and people are allowed to give input through that process. But it isn't necessarily the type of grassroots effort, I think, that's needed to make sure that you're really getting information from citizens and elected officials. And in those cases where we did provide a great deal of comments, it seemed as though many of those comments were virtually ignored.
Follow up?
That's good, thank you.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner Sivaraja, when I served myself as mayor in Waconia City in Carver County, we were the development authority as well. And we found that the plans of the Met Council were somewhat incongruous with our own. Did you find the same to be the case in Anoka County with some of the plans that the municipalities had set forward being out of step or incongruous with the Met Council?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nash, yes, there are definitely communities who do not share the same vision that the Met Council has for their communities.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner
Nash.
Thank you. Did you find that the methodology for redress or discussing those issues was open and fair and accountable, or did you find it to be, as I did, very difficult and cumbersome?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nash, I would say that when we've had those discussions, it tends to be quite one-sided. We provide the information, and it seems to fall on deaf ears.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I just wanted to
represent
the commissioner. So I don't know how many councilors you are represented by in the county as a whole. But as you're communicating then to the council, is it through those representatives and they are, you know, their job is to press your case, or how do you see that role?
Commissioner Sivaraja.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, we have had discussions with the former chair of the Met Council as a group of suburban counties who shared a lot of the same issues. We held a joint meeting with the chair, shared some of our concerns. We all sent letters as well. We've communicated with our Met Council members who were willing to have that discussion.
Okay. And then one other question. You mentioned something about a funding solicitation. And I don't know what that refers to. Could you share that with us?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, that refers to the federal transportation dollars that come into the metropolitan region, and that funding solicitation process determines where those funds ultimately will go and based upon what criteria. Some of the criteria added this time gave points specifically for regional equity.
There are no further questions for Commissioner. I understand we have a couple of more people that want to testify to this bill. I have Mr. Kolb, councilman from the City of Crystal, if he's in attendance. If you could approach the testifier's table, Mr. Kolb. For the sake of formality, welcome to the committee, Mr. Kolb, and for the record, if you could recognize yourself and who you represent.
Sure. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Kolb. I am a member of the City Council in the City of Crystal. I recently took office just this year, earlier this year. Before that, I served on Crystal's Planning Commission for a number of years, so I'm familiar with the planning process through that as well. Crystal is a fully developed suburb with a population of about 23,000. We're located just northwest of Minneapolis. We're considered a first-ring suburb of Minneapolis. I'm here today to speak in support of HF 75, which would make the Met Council plans and guidelines advisory in nature. I believe this is actually one of the most important proposed reforms that this committee could take up. The City of Crystal has significant concerns with the Met Council's Thrive 2040 plan and the direction that the Met Council has taken in recent years. I have copies with me today of several letters that were sent to the Met Council by Crystal City officials as we went through this process regarding those concerns. And to date, we have received no meaningful replies to those letters, only an acknowledgement of receipt of those letters. To put things into a little bit of context for the City of Crystal, in the initial Thrive 2040 plan, the projections that were stated for the City of Crystal, and I'd like to just as a quick aside state that I don't believe that the Met Council uses the word projections the way that it's normally understood in the English language. I believe that projection really means goal in this case, because they expect you to take certain actions to meet these projections, as opposed to a projection just being kind of a an understanding of where they think things will be going. But the initial projections for Crystal was that our population would increase by 28%, the number of households in Crystal would increase by 35%, and the employment in Crystal would go up by 55%. Now, again, that's a fully developed city that has no new land to develop. After some back and forth, we got a set of revised projections, which has our population increasing by 5%, our number of households by 9%, and our employment still rising by 40%. For a little bit of context on those numbers, during the years of 2000 to 2007, Crystal had a net gain of 179 housing units, so we had an average of about 22 per year. Those numbers obviously dropped off dramatically during the recession years, but during the time when the market was very good, we added about 22 units per year. The initial projections would have required 107 new units of housing per year to be added, or a rate of approximately five times our historical average. Our new revised projections would require 27.5 units per year, so that's still a pace greatly exceeding where we had been during boom years.
Mr. Kolb?
Yes.
If I could just pause you for a second there and just go back to those projections themselves.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, in terms of the metrics that were provided with those projections that they gave you initially, upon what basis did you discern that those projections were made? Were there specific categories of population growth, whether it be demographics in terms of senior, from age bands, or did they elaborate in terms of what their expectations were in terms of demographics?
Sure. I don't have a lot of insight into that process that really kind of happened at the staff level at our city. I do know that it's kind of the understanding, or how it was explained to me by our staff, was that there's kind of a regional goal that's set up, and then it just kind of gets allocated out based on a number of factors. And when we pushed back on the numbers, we were told that maybe the model had not properly taken into account developed land versus undeveloped land. That was kind of the explanation that we got, which got us to some of the revised numbers.
And Mr. Cole, when you talk about the factors that they included, did they elaborate on those factors as well?
I'm sorry, I don't have that information in front of me.
Thank you. You can proceed.
Thanks. So again, we're looking at a process. We're supposed to add 27.5 units per year. At the same time, we are projected to add 1,500 jobs. And again, we're talking about on the same land that we would presumably use to add these housing units. Clearly, there's a disconnect between reality and what these projections are. Practical effect on a city like Crystal is that we are required by law, as I'm sure everyone is aware, to create a comprehensive plan. Our city objects to language in the Met Council's Thrive 2040 plan that seems to mandate that Crystal would amend our comprehensive plan to accommodate these projections, including a new mandate for density minimums. There are several other areas throughout the Thrive 2040 plan where the Met Council seems to overstep its statutory authority by attempting to mandate the adoption of certain transportations and street policies that have historically been and should remain the purview of local governments. These encroachments on local government authority are not specific to Thrive 2040, but rather are commonplace throughout the Met Council plans. If I may, I'd like to read a brief excerpt from a letter that was sent to the Met Council in September of 2014 by the Crystal City staff in response to the Council's draft housing policy plan. And here's the excerpt. Has the city discussed in its April 18, 2014 letter regarding Thrive MSP 2040, the city objects to the Council's treatment of housing as if it were a regional system on par with transportation, sewers, and so forth. For good reason, the Land Planning Act does not include housing as a regional system because it is predominantly privately owned, in contrast to the statutory regional systems, which are public facilities. The Land Planning Act does not speak of density, only that a city must provide adequate housing to meet the city's share of existing and projected needs. Crystal is a fully developed community, and its housing is already predominantly affordable when compared with regional averages. The Council is using high density as a proxy for affordability, thus twisting an affordability requirement into a density mandate and exceeding its statutory authority. Again, that comes from a letter that came from Crystal City staff that was sent to the Met Council. Today, there are a number of punitive measures that the Met Council can take against a city that does not comply with their mandated projections or changes to their comprehensive plan. They can deny grant funding. They can also even sue a city to force a change to their comprehensive plan, which has happened in the past. By passing HF 75, you would clarify that Met Council plans are indeed advisory in nature and not binding documents that can be used to infringe on the ability of cities to govern themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kolb. Any questions for the testifier? If not, thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Kolb. Representative Rumbeck.
I wanted to learn a little bit more. I mean, so the jobs creation piece of it seems very, very interesting. Was there any detail provided as to what the expectations were? I mean, how were you? What kind of industry, where they thought the opportunities were for job creation and growth?
Mr. Kolb.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rundbeck, no, it's my understanding it's kind of up to us to figure out where the jobs come from. I do know that there seems to be a lack of acknowledgement on the change in eminent domain laws. I mean, in a city like Crystal, the only way that we could add significant jobs or housing units would be to use eminent domain or to somehow, you know, condemn property and then replace it with something of higher density. That where that becomes impractical in a place like Crystal is that most of the land is owned by individual landowners, and you would have to somehow acquire, you know, several tracts next to each other to make that kind of development happen. So it's unclear, and the city believes that the employment projections are not attainable and not realistic. However, there doesn't seem to be any type of at least immediate penalty that we would face for not seeking those numbers, so we're kind of we've put a little less emphasis on that, where the household numbers is where we think that we could find ourselves the subject of some punitive action for not rezoning the way that we're being instructed to.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Kolb, is there any immediate action the city's taking in terms of current economic development decisions that you're making that are presently impacted by Met Council?
Mr.
Kolb, anything in the wings?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Rumbeck. Yes, we the City of Crystal has, like many other cities, an economic advisory commission that or an economic development authority, EDA. Mm-hmm. And so we do take up a number of development projects, but we are at this point those are guided by our comprehensive plan that was set up during the last process. So we have our land zoned or guided for certain density or certain use, and then we will be selective about doing development projects when the opportunity arises. So if we had a business that were to close, or we had a opportunity for land to arise, we would look at those types of things. But again, in a fully developed community, we're really looking at, in our comprehensive plan, we have identified places where things may happen, areas that we consider redevelopment might happen because of certain factors, but there's not really anything that we can do from a city standpoint to force development to happen, nor do we think we should be able to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any further questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Cole, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next on the list, I have Ms. Kelly Slavik.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rumbeck.
I believe she's coming at about 11 o'clock.
Right.
So if we could take, we have Mayor Mary Giuliani Stevens from Woodbury.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor.
Thank you.
If you could recognize yourself for the record and state who you represent.
Mary Giuliani Stevens, and I represent the City of Woodbury. Chairman, members, thanks for having me here today. I'm going to talk just on housing. I have a few points to make. I'd certainly be open to questions on anything else regarding this, and to the extent I can answer them, I will. We understand that the Metropolitan Council is required by the state's Land Use Planning Act to project affordable housing needs for the metro area every 10 years. I'd like to just give you a couple points about Woodbury and who we are. For those of you that may not know, we're the ninth largest city in Minnesota now, located on the intersection of I-94, 494, and 694. And we are home to about 67,000 residents and 21,000 jobs. Woodbury has been a strong advocate for affordable housing. We are known for our strategic long-range planning, providing housing for people of all ages. Incomes and family status is a priority and guiding principle for us in our comprehensive plan. We're very proud of the fact that we host 73 Habitat for Humanity homes and have been in partnership with Habitat on a number of other projects other than housing because of that great relationship. And so that 73 represents the third most Habitat homes, second only to Minneapolis and St. Paul. And our Municipal Housing and Redevelopment Authority programs, including our first-time homebuyers program, have been highlighted for their success by the League. And I'll say that under those four programs that we have, we do ask for a little commitment from the homeowners borrowing, and we have a 0% default rate as of today. So having said that, by way of background, Woodbury is projected to be the third fastest growing in the community in the metro area in the next decade, that decade being in that 2021 to 2030. Therefore, the Met Council is proposing Woodbury's, quote, fair share of affordable housing needs to be about 1,800 new affordable housing units in that time period, so from 2021 to 2030. Building 1,800 affordable housing units in the next decade is not aligned with the home building and real estate industries. The housing is market driven, and developers will not be able to build units in Woodbury for less than the affordable housing price guideline of $220,000. A requirement to plan for 1,800 new affordable housing units presents a serious land use challenge for us. A requirement to guide acreage at medium to high densities presents an undue regulatory burden on the city when the Met Council is requiring that 48%, almost half, of our new homes be affordable. So we're not challenging the need for affordable housing, but a requirement of one of every two units to be affordable just does not make sense from a planning perspective from the community of Woodbury. Those are my remarks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor Stevens. I just have a couple of maybe qualifying questions myself. What is described as affordable housing? Is it a band of price range? Is it based upon some federal mandate? How does it go about in terms of determining that it's affordable?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is determined by a definition by the Met Council in their formulation of the average median income, and that's the term that we use when we talk about affordable here.
Thank you. Then the follow-up then, in your own municipal's planning, obviously you probably are preparing for affordable housing within the constraints of your grid. How many units have you as a municipality planned for affordable housing within your borders?
Well, we haven't done the update to our comprehensive plan, so that'll be part of that process over the next few years. I can say that in the last decade for the plan, we're one of few cities that actually met our affordable housing goals within the community. I have reached out to the Met Council in my letter and had made some suggestions regarding the housing plan and definition of affordable housing, because during the recession when housing prices dropped, I thought it was fair to maybe look at current stock as being affordable, not just new housing being constructed. And then, of course, within the confines of each community is so different. You just heard from Crystal, who's built out and is being challenged with how do they add more jobs and how do they add more housing. Woodbury is a growing community, and the land that's available for housing and our planning for land use doesn't have the housing in areas where the land is affordable and the land isn't on transit lines or access to busing services or transportation services.
Mayor, how many units in your last comprehensive plan did you appropriate for affordable housing?
I don't know the answer, but Carl Batalden, our housing specialist, came with me today. Carl, do you have a number for us?
We were required to plan that there would be opportunity for 2,057 units.
If you could approach the stand, please. Thank you.
Do you want to just grab a chair, Carl?
Sure.
For the record, if you could just state your name and your position within the community.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Batalden. I'm the Housing and Economic Development Coordinator for the City of Woodbury. In the current comprehensive plan, the 2030 comp plan, we were required to acknowledge our fair share of 2,057 units of affordable housing. While we acknowledged, we were required to acknowledge that that was our fair share of the affordable housing need, we were also very clear in our comprehensive plan that that was not an achievable number. So it's a very difficult question to ask, because on the one hand, we're required to acknowledge our fair share of the need. We're not necessarily disputing the need. But what we are trying to highlight is that there is not a practical way for us to meet that need, but that the Metropolitan Council requires certain tracts of land to be guided at either medium or high density levels to guarantee that there is an opportunity for the market to build affordable housing. So there's some nuance in there between what's required versus what is aspired to.
Thank you. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm curious about analysis that your community might be making in regards to affordable housing needs. Are you doing analysis with what jobs are available in the area? So, for instance, is your job growth primarily in low-wage jobs through retail and those types of jobs, or more corporate jobs? And is there a balance in terms of making sure that people who work in your community can live in your community, and is that factored into your analysis?
Mayor Stevens?
I'll start with that, Chair, Representative. I'd say yes to all of those things. We sit on the interstate, so you know that, so we do have a high number of retail jobs. And as the projections show, those will continue to grow. Woodbury has a great diversity in its employment sector as well, so we do hold a lot of the high-paying jobs in our community. We're blessed to have a Healthy's Hospital Woodwinds, and so we have a lot of jobs in the medical sector that provide for that, so we have a balance and a mixture there. We recognize the need for transit and getting people to those retail jobs. We're a proponent of the Gateway Corridor and the bus rapid transit that's being developed out there, because we've heard that there are many jobs that people in St. Paul would like to get to Woodbury to do. So can everybody live in the community they work in? No. Would we like to? But providing those opportunities and those choices, absolutely yes.
Representative Howerson.
And I appreciate the transit conversation. I was thinking in terms of housing units as well, and the way that your community chooses to develop and is a balance of affordable and market rate housing part of that equation when you're looking at the balance of jobs in the community.
In terms of where we develop the affordable housing, we do not concentrate affordable housing, so it is spread out within the community. And, you know, in terms of the numbers of affordable housing versus jobs, I don't know, Carl, do you have any statistics?
Mr. Batalden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Halverson. The difficulty gets into, in planning law, you're not really allowed to investigate or ask, you know, how much money is the mortgage holder going to be making that's going to be buying the house that's developed. Rather, what we have done and what we attempt to do is create a series of market-friendly zoning policies that allow for the wide variety of housing type. But just because something is guided at a medium density or higher density does not equate to affordability. You have many apartment buildings with a lot of density that are built that have high rents. You have a lot of low density single family homes that might be affordable. So it's very difficult to tie the land use and the zoning and the jobs and the housing. That said, that is why we've created the partnerships with Habitat for Humanity, why in 2006 we started a municipal housing authority. We levy for it. We take the time to put the tools into play.
And Representative and
Mayor
Mr.
Stevens.
Chair, if I just might add to that as well, we're looking at a great opportunity down by our, where we're developing a lot, and we have senior housing, and we have some commercial and retail development happening. We are looking at a parcel to pursue that in terms of affordable housing, because that would be accessible not to transit or buses, because again it's in the southern part of our community, not anywhere close to the freeway, but for walking. And so we do have potential areas we're looking at to develop affordable housing.
Representative Halverson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess it's helpful for me to hear. My community of Eagan is much more developed. We are kind of hitting all of our boundaries, but we are having a real boom in retail development, and we've kind of been underserved in retail in my community, and all of a sudden we are adding thousands and thousands of retail jobs. One of the concerns that I continually think of and bring up in my community is, are we ensuring that people who are working in our community can afford to live in our community? And because I would love to see those young families investing in our communities and filling up our schools and growing their careers as residents of my community. And very often those are entry-level jobs and get people on their career path. And so it's the conversations I've been having with my community, and it's helpful to hear more. You know, you've had a little more experience with us, and it's helpful to hear your experience. So thank you.
Welcome.
Mayor Stevens, any comment?
I guess I would just add, thank you for your comments. I know you didn't have a question in there, but I think one of the things we've done successfully is with our programs for foreclosure home program and the new time home buyers, it's allowing us to allow people to get into those homes who do hold those lower paying jobs and be able to live there. I can use my children as an example, because had the recession not happened, they wouldn't be in their home, but they got a bank owned home that had dropped in market value by $70,000. And so hence we had existing stock that came into what I would probably define as affordable, but you know, it wasn't in somebody else's formula and it wasn't new housing, but clearly affordable in allowing people to move into our community. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Madam Mayor, question for you. When I served as mayor, we would create the Economic Development Authority, and we would basically recess and return back as the commissioners of the Economic Development Board. And I'm sure you serve, as I did, as the president of that when you convene. The Thrive 2040 plans, did they actually enable you to do your job that you were elected to do, or did that create some incongruencies and some more hurdles for you to overcome as you were going to conduct the business that you were elected to do?
Mayor Stevens.
Well, since Thrive, Chairman, Representative, since Thrive 2040 hasn't been enacted yet in terms of its implementation, it's been approved. I don't know that I have the exact answer to that. The city did have concerns with Thrive 2040. I think it addressed some of the issues and principles in the region that we needed to address. We did have concerns with whether they were the Met Council's the proper authority to get into the additional areas that they were looking to get into with Thrive 2040, and that there might be some unintended consequences, specifically in economic development, climate control, equity, some of the new areas that they were getting into. For economic development, I don't know how that's going to play out. I do know their job projections are much lower than we think they're going to be, so I'm anticipating we'll have some conversations with them there. How it will affect our land use plan in implementation, I'm not sure. Again, we're well known for our strategic planning. We feel we've done it right by putting the jobs along the busy corridors and having our diversity of housing throughout the community, so everybody has an opportunity to access all the amenities we have in the community. Did I answer your question?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, you did. Thank you.
Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I listened to you talk about the housing, and I hear single-family housing. I'm curious about, I'm aware of an area by Bethune in Minneapolis where they built, and this is very similar to something in St. Anthony near me, too, where it's condos, it's apartments, it's senior living, it's single-family homes, and it's all blended together, and it's gorgeous. I mean, this is community living. This is true community, and it works very well, and it attracts all levels of income, and it attracts people from all, and it lifts everyone. I'm wondering if you have any of this sort of thing in your plans.
Mayor Stevens.
Thank you, Chairman, Representative. I'll just say for the record, I'm sorry if I'm only emphasizing single family. That seems to be the current market and what's driving it. Woodbury has an even split between its multifamily and its single family. And we've attracted some very recent senior projects as the senior living becomes a demand as our population ages. We have made some adjustments to zoning to allow some senior housing. So we have a great diversity and mix of housing. And like I said, about 50-50 between our multi-family housing and our single-family housing.
Representative Lane.
I would just encourage you to look at mixing it all together, as some of these newer developments do. They mix all the things together.
Mayor Stevens, any comment? Mr. Batalden, I have a question for you. You are the Administrator Economic Development Officer for the City of Woodbury, is that correct?
On the staff level, yes.
Okay. And you hold a degree in regional planning or in municipal planning?
I do hold a master's degree from the Humphrey School in urban and regional planning, yes.
So, from a perspective of a planner such as you have a degree in, when you take a look at planning out for a municipality, if you could just expand for my benefit and hopefully for the rest of the members, what does that all entail? What key components do you need? What pillars do you rest your plan on top of in order for a municipality to thrive? No pun intended.
Sure. No, I...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the question. With regards to sort of the planning theory, if you will, oftentimes it is said that strong community development is a three-legged stool, with those three legs being housing, employment, and infrastructure. And then in addition to those three legs, you need to have the amenities of strong education, and you need to have the open space with your parks and recreation programs that lead to that quality of life. So I think from an absolute, very basic, very macro level, what you need to be doing is making sure that the opportunity for commercial development and residential development are, you know, interrelated and compatible. And when you're putting your land use maps together, when you're putting your zoning maps together, you want to offer opportunities for development, but you need to have a balance of the flexibility with what's actually on the map.
And as a follow-up then, as an axiom, people and their money go where they're best treated. And so as you consider Woodbury, and you've got Lake Elmo to the south and slightly to the west, you've got Stillwater, you've got further to the north, you've got other municipalities, you're competing with those cities as well. So how do you differentiate yourself to attract those functions that you just described?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Woodbury, I think it really all starts with our high-quality education, our good workforce, and our quality of life. And while it may seem as though we're competing with our neighboring communities, we're also cooperating with our neighboring communities. That, you know, we're all in one region, and I just think it's important to allow communities to have the choices to offer the characteristics and the standards that they want to offer.
So, Mr. Batalden, it would be fair to say then that you share your visions with the other administrators, city administrators in your locale, and are coordinating, as it were, your efforts along with their own. I'm sure the mayor can expound on this in terms of making sure that you're not just stepping on one another's toes, but complementing each other's services and profiles. Is that correct?
I'm not sure what happened there. Mr. Chairman, yes, we do have relationships with our surrounding communities as well as the school district, the county, and in my case with our businesses, because I do an extensive business outreach program. We do share comp plans as required. I actually think that's a pretty good thing, so that we make sure we are looking, we do have that regional perspective, and we are looking at, because we do adjoin each other as neighbors. With respect to the school districts, it's important because our growth depends on their strategic plan for facilities and boundaries. With respect to our providers, so Comcast and CenturyLink and Xcel, it's important to meet with them. So in the private sector, as people are planning job growth or expansion of their services, they know where we're growing. And so we work very hard in those relationships to establish those, so we do talk and have regular conversations on those topics, including planning and economic development.
Thank you.
I wonder, wanted to address a question of you, Mayor. The plan talks specifically about numbers in terms of racial quantities, I guess. But what are you experiencing in terms of minorities and the movement into your community, say, in the last decade? I mean, my understanding is that, you know, we're seeing the market work very well, and as the new populations of immigrants become, you know, employed and move up the ladder, that they are moving into our suburbs because the market is allowing them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for that question. I think the last census that came out, I'm sorry, I think something happened. There we go. The last census that came out showed that Woodbury is a suburb, I think, had the fastest growing minority population percentage-wise. Our demographics might be a little different. A lot of those are doctors and engineers that come to work in the 3M and the surrounding employment area. But we are seeing changing demographics. It's exciting because it adds adds a new conversation to the community, and I think it makes the community better, and we continue to look for ways to engage them. I think they feel they're engaged now, but always looking for ways better to get them engaged. And I'll just also add that what I think it's great that people have choices. I mean, last week I read an article that all the millennials want to live downtown and not own a car and work in Minneapolis, and then yesterday I read an article that said the millennials are going to change their mind and they want to be in the suburbs with good schools and have backyards. And my thought was, well, I guess you could probably make an argument for both, but really, isn't it great that we live somewhere where people can have choices on where they want to live and work?
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Batalden and Mayor Stevens. No further questions. I see we still have Mayor Slavik. If you're prepared, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Fenton.
I just wanted to thank our mayor and Carl for coming down and commend them, because Woodbury has been growing very rapidly, and I think our city leaders have done a great job with the balance of jobs, housing, and all of the amenities for the families. So I just want to thank them.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you.
And if you could introduce yourself and who you represent for the committee.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Slavik, and I am the mayor of Plymouth. Pleasure to be here today. Sorry I ran in a little bit late, and I don't want to repeat testimony that you've already heard. I was reading to school children this morning in Plymouth. It was a much easier audience, no offense. But I do want to provide some comments on HF 75, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to do that today. And again, if this is a little bit repetitive, I apologize for that. But for the City of Plymouth perspective, the Met Council, in our view, was originally designed to provide regional oversight for sanitary sewer, transportation, and parks. And over the time, we see its scope really expanding and broadening into housing redevelopment, and now we're seeing it starting to creep into water management with the Thrive 2040 plan. And we understand that this high-level oversight is very beneficial, especially when you have multiple communities that are trying to all work within the region. We think that too much of this oversight can really stifle the diversity among communities that both residents and businesses in our region really value. I think the metro really benefits from the strength that each community contributes to the overall region, and we are a region of very distinct communities. Even those communities that are neighbors to Plymouth are very different from us. For example, we neighbor with Golden Valley and New Hope and have a lot of differences there, just not from a size perspective, but just from the number of businesses and the way the schools operate. And also our borders with Maple Grove, Minnetonka, and Medina, we differ greatly there as well. So being all kind of lumped together, I think, is a mistake. And I think one of the reasons that the metro area really thrives is the diversity as you go from city to city. And I think that recent policy decisions by the Met Council are really starting to suppress this diversity and instead favor kind of a homogenous community, and a one-size solution certainly doesn't fit all communities. With the city now starting to look at updating our comprehensive plan and in partnering this with the Thrive 2040 plan, we're still submitting and having conversations with the Met Council on what this plan is going to look like, but now they're starting to really drive densities and tell the city how we should develop and what our density should be. When you have this regional body coming to the city to do this, it gets a little bit frustrating. I don't think they know our community. They don't really take a look at the value of the land and the amenities that the land offers, such as they don't understand the wetlands, and we're not going to fill in wetlands to make it more dense, and just how the economics work. So it really is difficult, I think, to have this regional body dictate to cities how we should be zoning and guiding and what kind of densities that we should have. We kind of have, over the years, I've been in city government now for 16 years, and this has been a continual battle with them over this. So we really see that also with the water management, that we already have several state agencies, the MPCA, we've got Bowser, we've got the DNR, we've got the watersheds. All of those are working on these water issues, and now we've got the Met Council that's going to come in and through their Thrive 2040 plan, they want to start having a role in the water management, and I don't understand, and I'm not sure they do at this point, how it's going to fit in with all these other agencies and how we're going to sort this out, who's going to vet what. And so it's been, I think, a little difficult for cities to kind of wrap their hands around how what this new plan is going to do for us and what the requirements are, what are the penalties going to be if we don't meet those requirements. It's, you know, we're starting to see a lot of overreach that is really taking, you know, having cities take a step back and consider what impacts they may have on our cities. And we do, I do meet with mayors frequently from other communities, and they share the same concerns. And, you know, I think we all read the headlines of what frustration is being expressed with the Met Council. We certainly want to work together with them. I think they play a very valuable role. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the elected officials that are elected to do these jobs can do them without the interference that we see the Met Council pushing at us. So that's kind of where the city is coming from. If you have any questions, I'd be certainly glad to answer them.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Madam Mayor, question for you. When I served as mayor in Waconia, we got the initial 2040 projections. Our growth rate was shown as very, very slow and actually shrinking from the basis of the reality. I remember speaking with Councilmember Johnson from your city council, and she stated to me that your numbers were excessively high and that you had essentially nowhere to put these people, and you were going to have to be more than creative as to how you would comply with those numbers. Tell me, what did you wind up doing to work through those numbers, and how did you push back? Were you able to push back successfully to get those into a realistic outcome?
Sure.
Mayor.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nash, the City Council, we did have some very excessive growth numbers that were projected by the Met Council. There was no way we could meet those goals, even if we surpassed the density that they had assigned to us. There just wasn't the space available to do that in our community. So we did go back to the Met Council on several occasions and express to them our concerns. And again, that goes back to my comment about they don't really come to our community and understand that what not just what the market is, but what the land can absorb. There's only, I mean, when you've got 4 acres, there's only, and two of it's covered in wetlands, there's only so much you can put there. And so we really tried to be very specific with the Met Council and let them know how we could develop, where we could develop, what our densities could be. And they did come back and they lowered our projections somewhat, but still not in a way that the council found satisfactory. We're still having these conversations, and we'll have to go back. And as we see, our community is still growing. We have a large portion of Northwest Plymouth that is farmland that we're really starting to see a lot of development there. So as these developers come in and develop, you know, the market certainly plays a role there as well. But we want, you know, we're somewhat constricted, and as I think we'll have to keep making adjustments with the Met Council as we see the developers come in and figure out what, I mean, when something's been a farm for 50 years and there's issues with soil and water, we're really going to be restricted in road access and infrastructure on how much we can develop there. And I think cities really have the expertise to make that determination.
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, Madam Mayor, question again for you. We were told by the demographer that was creating the Thrive plan that they really weren't looking specifically at the individual cities. It was more of a blended model. Did you get the same information as we did?
Mr. Chairman, we did get that information, and that's why we tried to really make a specific case. And we've long argued at the City of Plymouth that densities are more of a regional issue. When my neighboring community has land that's selling for much less than it is in Plymouth, it may make sense to get something more dense there. Or if you have a city that's closer to downtown Minneapolis with better transit opportunities, it's better to get more density there. We need to really be looking at this regionally. I understand that, but we also need to make sure that we're taking the unique characteristics of each community into play, and the Met Council doesn't have that information, and I think that is very valuable in determining these densities and how cities are growing and developing.
Mr. Nash, Representative Nash.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Last question for you, Madam Mayor. In my experience, we provided a monthly bit of data to the Met Council when we would hook up houses so that they had this baseline information, and it was unknown to them when they came to visit us that they actually had this information. Were your growth projections, I guess were they acknowledging any actual data derived from your city in their projections, or was it again just a blind modeling activity? Because it was our experience that they had no basis in actual hookups in reality and business growth, residential growth. If you could address that question for us, please.
Mayor Slovak.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, we have the same experience that they, and we have tried to communicate. I have reached out personally many times to Met Council representatives. We have a really good one right now. I think that is making great effort, and I appreciate that. It's great to have somebody to work with, but there's been often times where I was calling them, you know, day after day and getting no response and trying to communicate these things with them. But yes, you're correct. They did not have any indication of what was happening in the communities, and, you know, there's such a, you know, they don't even know, I think, what's developing as residential versus commercial industrial and all of that, and infrastructure. When you're still developing, you're building infrastructure. It was really difficult to get them to kind of, you know, really partner with us on what was happening in the community.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. No further.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor, thank you for your comments, and they're very, very, very thoughtful, and I appreciate them. And, you know, as you've talked, and you've kind of answered some of this, but, you know, you've talked about the necessity of regional planning, you know, and you use the example, you don't have much land to build out, and if a neighboring city does, you know, you have to take a regional approach, and yet you've outlined some of the real difficulties that you've been experiencing. So I'm just wondering, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if we would make the Met Council role advisory, how would we be able to, how would that work? What would you, you know, because then the city next to you, even though they have the space, could say, sorry, we're not doing it. Do you have any thoughts, or what would your ideal vision of how the Met Council could do this regional planning yet still allow cities, you know, to handle their cities, which they know best?
Mm-hmm. Mayor Slavik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seltzer, you know, I think that's an interesting question. Of course, just because it's advisory doesn't mean that the city isn't going to pay attention and, you know, work within our region to make the best decisions for everybody. I don't think cities are selfish and just looking out for themselves. We partner with cities on so many different, you know, services that we provide. You know, we share, you know, mutual response with our public safety. We've partnered with other communities for recycling to get better contracts and better numbers. And so we naturally work together. I think that's the normal thing to do. Just because it's an advisory doesn't mean the cities will ignore it, but trying to hold something over our heads and force us to do something, I don't think is the right answer either. I think that we can really, what happens in the city next to me does play into what happens in my city. So they want the best for me. I want the best for them. I think we all work very well together. And when we're, you know, contingent, you know, a continuous region there, we really want to have great partners. And I think, like I said, just because it's advisory doesn't mean the cities aren't going to say, wait, that's a great idea, or wait, we can make this change and work together. So I really feel as elected officials, we can make these decisions and work together.
Representative Seltzer, a follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments. And yeah, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, as a former, I was on a school board, and we collaborated with and created new entities with other school districts in the area, and so I understand that. And yet, just a comment that still 40 years ago, you know, our legislature and our governor saw a need, and we've seen a need for 40 years for regional planning, and so I appreciate your thoughts on how to strike that balance, but I think it's a difficult issue.
Mayor Slavik, any response?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seltzer, I agree with you, and I think there is definitely a role for some regional planning, but to have, to try to penalize cities that aren't following it, I think that's why I really think the advisory piece is great, because I think that brings everybody to an equal place in the table where we can have great dialogue. I would hope that with more an advisory
role coming to cities that we would be invited to the table to have these conversations with the Met Council. Oftentimes we hear from their staff and it kind of trickles down, and you know, I think the communication could be better. So I think if we had more equal partners, we would have better dialogue and we could do what's in the best interest of everybody in the region and the cities.
Mayor Slavik, I have a question, and it would pertain to you alluded to the fact that you're still in a growth mode, and we hear almost on a daily basis about the aging of the demographic in all of our communities. And so as you're looking at your planning, and I've asked this of other mayors that have been before us this morning, I'm curious to find out how you as a mayor for a municipality are planning for that life cycle housing, if we're talking about housing, or life cycle planning in terms of as those that are in their 40s and 50s progress into their 60s and 70s, and how you're elaborating in terms of identifying the opportunities that you have as a municipality for the kind of the transit nature of those that live in your community or would want to move there because of those amenities and services.
Sure. Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't want to brag, but I think Plymouth has really nailed it on that one. We do operate two senior living facilities as a city, and they've been very successful. They're full. We have waiting lists. But also, life cycle housing has been something that's really been easy for the city to achieve. We've had the developers have a really strong interest in our community to provide that service. We're seeing with our growth, we've seen a lot of families that are moving in for the schools, but there, and then we also see elderly people that really want to stay in their community. Either their family's there or they've grown up there and they're familiar with the community. We have many life cycle options. We've got some memory care facilities. We've got sort of the more traditional nursing home type facilities. And those continue to just really thrive. We've had developers come to us with many of those. We have two projects right now. One of them is called The Waters that is completed, and it's by a transit area and it's by shopping. That's a senior living facility that they came to us and they were really excited to build. We've got one called Trillium Woods that's under construction that is this massive facility that is, and they're really doing some great outreach in our community and reaching out to those residents that have raised their children and want to stay in the community and are kind of aging out of wanting to take care of a larger home and, you know, take care of the lawn and the maintenance that goes along with that. So I think we've been very fortunate in that we've had the developers coming to us with all of these different projects. It's been a little almost challenging to try to keep up with them all, but we think it's great for our community. I hear from seniors all the time. I spoke to a senior men's group yesterday morning, which was probably one of the most engaged groups I've spoken to for quite a while. But most of them had moved into a townhome in Plymouth. And so we often see, too, that we have a young family. That's what happened with me. When I moved to Plymouth, I lived in a townhouse until I started to have children and move into a house. When I moved out of my townhouse, an elderly couple moved in there. So I think, you know, as we see, I think Plymouth is, I hate to brag again, but I think Plymouth is an awesome community. And when people move there, they want to stay there. And so to have these options, I think we have a great amount of life cycle housing in Plymouth. And we continue to see that great interest by developers. I think we've just been real fortunate in that regard.
So, Mayor Slavik, just as a follow-up to that, do you see this as being an organic process that you have undertaken, or as I've heard you say that the developers have come to you with ideas? I wonder if you could just briefly expand on terms of what's driving that. Is it demographics that you're seeing, or is it the developers in the marketplace seeing it? Where is the data being fed to you that confirms the ideas that you're putting in place?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think really our demographics speak to that, but we do, I think we have so much to offer in Plymouth, and speaking with seniors, they really value the education system that we have and just the safety in our community, and that we operate our own bus system. We're an opt-out community, so we have a lot of flexibility with that to be able to provide services. And so I really think, you know, it's probably a bit of a combination of both. I think that the developers are pretty savvy. They understand that our population is aging and that they need to provide that sort of housing, you know, to
to make money. And so, but also with the city operating two facilities, two larger facilities, more apartment style, we really have taken the need. I mean, we study the, you know, what's happening as well, and we want to make sure that the city has a play in that too, and the units that we have in our community that the city operates are affordable units, because we understand too that, you know, as the, you know, they're starting to rely more on their retirement funds, that we need to make sure that they can stay in Plymouth. And I think they're very valued in our community. Our seniors, they're such a value to us that we want to make sure that we have a place for them. They're our volunteers, they're in our schools, they're out doing so much that we want to make sure that we're being proactive to keep them there as well. So I think it's a win-win between the seniors and the community to keep them there and partner with them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. for your Chair, time this morning.
Representative Rumbeck. I'd just like to inquire a bit about, so I'm still trying to get my arms around the housing thing. What's the price range then of your total housing market from, you know, existing and new, the low to the high? I mean, what's available for people who might be looking for the lower area of housing and price?
Mayor Slavik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runback, are you talking about new construction or existing? We have, our community is quite diverse, and we've had some challenges because we're kind of split in half by a highway, and it really has we have kind of two distinct feelings in our community. But we see everything from, you know, million-dollar plus homes to in areas of our homes that are selling for, you know, $90,000 up in the $150,000 range for single. That's just for single family. For multifamily too, we're seeing, you know, rents that are about kind of market average. We're seeing, you know, rents anywhere from $500 a month on up, depending on the unit and its location. So we have a great diversity in price range as well. The market lately has, with our new construction, has been bearing out more of the larger homes that people that are moving to Plymouth for the schools are wanting to raise their families there. So that's really with new construction. Then what we've been seeing, we haven't seen a lot of multifamily or townhomes, although we did recently build a larger apartment building, again, kind of at a busier intersection among the single-family homes, but for low-income families that are moving in to take advantage of the schools as well. And those have some affordable units there. We're also currently working on the east side of town with another developer to build another apartment building as well. And I understand that they were seeking some funds from the Met Council for some affordable units there. So I think there's a great range and a great diversity.
Mm-hmm. Great. I mean, I think some of the complaints, I guess, I've heard is that perhaps the quantity of existing homes that are affordable may not be looked at as part of the whole picture. So, you know, you don't get credit, perhaps, for some of those that exist today. So I have a question about that in my mind. But
great. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
We have Mr. Richardson.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Richardson is, I don't believe he's here, but, oh, okay, all right, great.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name and who you represent for the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Hi, my name is John Appitz. Pardon me, I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and we work with and represent Dakota County here at the state legislature. I'm going to be very brief because you heard Commissioner Sevaraja address some of the concerns that the counties generally have with regard to Met Council governance and oversight. There was a little miscommunication. We weren't quite connected on who was going to show up today, so give me that much time and I'll get out of your hair because I see what the time is like right now. Met Council reform is a regular topic at Dakota County. We have lots of conversations about this and some consternation as well. We were able to share some of that back in the fall when we had a conversation with the collar counties. The five collar counties got together and had discussions with the Met Council, the chair, and other members when we talked about the transportation policy plan. And we just last week had a chance to talk with the new chair of the council and shared a number of the concerns that we have with him and his staff when they came out for a tour of Dakota County. So we've gotten some of that across. let me iterate to you what it was that we basically said. At the heart, the issue that you all have to wrestle with is the question of governance and accountability, and, if you will, a bit of mission creep on the part of the Met Council, we believe. Dakota County certainly believes that there's a purpose and a reason to have a metropolitan planning organization. A population of 3 million people needs some guidance and coordination to overcome some of the parochial boundaries, if you will, of geography, of politics, of culture. But it's got to be accountable, and you need at the heart of it to have elected officials involved in this enterprise. Appointment, it doesn't work, and Dakota County will stand here and will tell you that several times over. Whether it's elected officials, whether it's members of the legislature, whether it's county and or city officials, and you just heard some very, very good testimony about how these people can contribute. That's something that you all need to consider as you bring this forward. Otherwise, you're kind of just working around the edges of this thing. I'm not here to criticize this proposal by any stretch of the imagination or staggered terms or legislative oversight or budget review or any of that, but it doesn't get at what you need to get at. You need to get at the question of governance and how this is held accountable. And the way we do it in this society is through elections and through elected officials. I just want to take you back very quickly, and I want to commend Madam Chair for the conversation you had with the legislative auditor when he brought forward his discussion of governance of transit in the Twin Cities region. And I'll commend you to go to Chapter 2 of that particular of this particular document and look at the principles of effective governance, and they go to questions of accountability, consensus, credibility, effectiveness. These are the principles on which we need to reform and revise the Met Council. So I just wanted to add that piece and, again, echo or say ditto to Commissioner Sivaraja's comments, and we'll have some more conversations as this goes forward, but thank you for the opportunity and apologies for the miscommunication.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Apitz. Any questions for the testifier?
Thanks.
Thank you much. That being said, I understand, and I would actually appreciate if Mr. Shetnan, if he had any comments for the committee. None? All right. Any closing remarks on your legislation, Representative Runbeck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the testifiers. I mean, I think that hearing from those folks who have firsthand experience with their comprehensive plans and with the mandates and the mission creep and so on, I think are going to be very enlightening to us as we think about what steps can be taken. And I think this is going to be, you know, it could be a long process. Who knows? But I think getting folks who understand and are affected by the plan and the guidelines here to share with us, I think is going to be very, very useful. So I do want to appreciate and thank them for their comments and appreciate the time.
Members, this was an informational hearing for House File 75, so no action will be taken at this time. And with that, we are adjourned.